Chair of the MODL Planning Advisory Committee, and I would like to call to order this Thursday, October the 26th meeting of the committee, and begin by acknowledging that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the traditional territory of the Mi'kmaq people. So I'd just like to review the procedure for the public to address the committee. First of all, we have two matters on the agenda tonight. The What We Heard report and the staff recommendation on coastal protection and the heritage property policy review. So the order of business is as follows. Staff presentations followed by committee discussion and questions to staff, then input from the residents in attendance, then back to the committee for final discussion and additional questions. Then following that, the committee members will vote on a recommendation to council. So the process for addressing the committee is an opportunity will be provided to all citizens to address the committee on each agenda item shown on this agenda or added to the agenda by this committee. Individuals who wish to address the committee are asked to note the following. On each matter on the committee's agenda, the chair will seek public comment upon the completion of staff's presentation. Each person shall state their name and community, and all statements and questions shall be directed to the chairperson. Presentation shall be limited to 10 minutes. Persons wishing to address the committee a second time will be given an opportunity to do so once all others in attendance have had the opportunity if they wish to address the committee. Persons addressing the committee for a second time shall limit their presentations to 5 minutes. And anyone wishing to address the committee on a matter not included on this agenda can have the matter added to the next meeting's agenda by contacting Jeff Merrill, the Director of Planning. It's Jeff right here, at 902-541-1340 or by email at planning@modal.ca. So I would just like to have a motion to approve the agenda. Okay. Councillor Haysom, seconder. Okay, Councillor Bell. Any discussion? I'll call the question. All in favor, please signify by raising your hand. A contrary minded, if any. Thank you. The next item is approval of the minutes of Thursday, October the 12th. That will be done at the next meeting of this committee. And the business arising from those minutes is all going to be happening at this meeting here tonight. So, Jeff, if you could just maybe introduce the next topic who will be presenting it. This is a What We Heard report and staff recommendation.
Yeah, so our planner, Alec Gindy, is going to give a presentation on the coastal protection regulations. And I won't steal any of your thunder. I'll let you do the talking from here.
Thank you so much. Good evening, everyone. And I'll just give a quick recap of the proposed regulations that we staff proposed to council regarding coastal flooding, coastal erosion, and sensitive coastal ecosystems. So for coastal flooding, staff recommended several recommendations. The first one is to utilize the 1.57-meter elevation reference for sea level rise. That type of reference we got from different agencies, federal, provincial, and also academic institutions. And the second recommendation is to employ a two-zone coastal flooding approach. So as you can see on the map on the right, Area A, which is in orange, it's our proposed coastal inundation area, so 0 to 2.34 meters. That area is expected by 2100 to be either permanently inundated or in some areas periodically. In that area, we are recommending to prohibit residential and institutional uses to mitigate any issues with the needs for emergency evacuation in the future. When we talk about institutional uses, we're talking about hospitals, senior homes, schools, etc. So areas where usually you have vulnerable populations, and when there is an emergency evacuation, you would want to mitigate that type of uses in that area. And we're also proposing to prohibit infilling in that area as well. In Area B, which is the area you can see on the map in yellow, it's a storm surge area. So as you've seen in the last storm, we had a storm surge and water level rised quite a lot. And that area, which is between 2.34 meters to 3.97 meters, we are suggesting to prohibit institutional uses. Other recommendations that we provided council was to provide specific exemptions for low-value accessory structures like a boathouse or dock, a wharf, etc., and anything that has to be marine-related activities, just because these areas are not habitable space and they do need to be close to the water. The fourth recommendation was to provide some allowances for non-conforming uses. So to permit non-conforming developments to undergo renovations, rebuilding, or relocating, but if these actions do not result in increased floor space or further elevation reduction. We are also proposing, as something that we've seen in the What We Heard report, and you'll see it throughout the other topics, is public awareness and education, increase that amount of awareness and education with among the public about coastal flooding, and also to review the policy regularly every 5 years, because maybe things will change in 5 years from now. Maybe we'll do good, and we'll have some emission reductions, and we could reduce the vertical elevation setback or the opposite around. For coastal erosion, we had some different recommendations that we proposed to council. The first one is to implement a universal setback of 50 meters. However, we do recognize that erosion rate does vary along the coast. So we are proposing that council will consider a setback reduction to a minimum of 15 meters. We are also recommending council to maintain a vegetative buffer of 15 meters from top of bank. So the horizontal setback will apply from 50 meters from top of bank, or if the bank is not noticeable, then calculate from the ordinary high water mark. We're also proposing some flexibility for existing development, similar to the coastal flooding. You can do some renovations, rebuilding, reconstruction, as long as the floor space is not being overly increased. And again, exemptions for water-related uses, similar to the flood risk, enable boathouses, wharves, decks, etc. Anything that has that is marine-related that needs to be along the water. And similar, like I mentioned before, with coastal flooding, we are proposing.
Can I just interrupt for 1 second?
Sorry.
The mayor has a.
Sorry. Yeah.
So I just want to go back to that habitable spaces. When you said that you couldn't increase the floor space, you can't increase the floor space towards the water.
Yes.
But you can increase the water to the floor space to the sides or back.
With coastal flood, with the Area A, we're proposing not to increase the floor space.
Okay.
Just because it's already in the flood area, in the flood zone area. We don't want to increase the. Okay. We want to minimize
so
any dangers. But you can lift it up. You can lift the structure up.
Yes.
Okay. We are providing again, like I said, flexibility for existing developments, as the mayor mentioned, and again, public awareness and education was a major topic. Throughout the What We Heard report for all the coastal flooding, coastal erosion, and coastal flooding. Public wanted to be aware, wanted us to increase the awareness about the importance of mitigating erosion or mitigating any flooding of properties, and also to review policy regularly every 5 years. Sensitive coastal ecosystems was a major topic with the What We Heard report, and there are several staff recommendations that followed the public wish of protecting these type of sensitive coastal ecosystems, such as wetlands. So staff recommended council to establish a 30-meter horizontal setback for coastal wetlands by using a constraint overlay map to manage those sensitive areas, and also to require a vegetative buffer. As well, we are recommending to collaborate with environmental non-governmental organizations, for example, as Ducks Unlimited, to increase our awareness of the special significant ecosystems that are in the area and how we can further protect those ecosystems. And again, also increase public awareness and education, and to review the policy regularly. For next steps, currently we provide recommendations that are presented today at PAC. Hopefully the next stage is to draft regulations and to present them to council again for first reading. And I think that's it.
Thank you. So we're going to now open it up for discussion and questions by committee members. Anybody have any questions? Mayor?
I will ask one question that was posed to me, and that's in relation to the setback, the 50-meter setback that's proposed on here, and the ability, there's no infilling to the front of this, and this was in relation to landscaping. And is one able to landscape their property in the front? Because in order to landscape, a lot of times you need to put down topsoil. And I guess, is topsoil one of those things that is considered infilling for that?
Go ahead, Henry.
Yeah, I can attempt to answer that question. It depends. So the recommendation is intended to prevent... we're only talking about the area A, which would be the most at-risk area, the flood area. That's the area that in this case we're recommending prohibiting infilling. So in those cases, the intention is so that the infill does not then allow somebody who has a very low-lying property to then jump in that fill and then build, which is better than building at a very low elevation, but doesn't eliminate the risk. So that's why the recommendation is there. But in terms of adding topsoil for landscaping, generally probably not, but I think that if there's a specific element there that, you know, I think when it comes to actually drafting regulation, there's opportunities there to craft things that speak to the intention and not get into stuff that's not related to it. So or if there was comments that come in from the public or from the committee that people want, that would want to have that included in the regulation, but ensure that people can still do minor, you know, infilling for the purposes of landscaping, that could be a comment or a recommendation from the committee. Certainly it's not the intention to prevent that, but in terms of the staff recommendation, we didn't get into those really specific elements yet.
And just to follow what Reed said, again, in Area A, if part of the horizontal setback, if part of it in terms of the topography is below 2.34, that's where we are recommending to prohibit infilling. But anywhere else where the elevation is higher and that type of infilling, like topsoil, where basically you're going to place vegetation on, most of the time, that's something that we didn't consider prohibiting.
And I guess supplementary to that, the numbers that we're using was based on a 75-year projection, correct?
77-year projection. 77-year by 2100
projection. Just for those who did not get that, and that's the life frame or whatever of a home is basically.
Yes, Councillor Hasten.
Thank you. I'm trying to recall the questions that I asked the last time, and I don't want to be repetitive. But one thing that had occurred to me was the piece around policy review every 5 years. I'm wondering why 5 years, and if, given what we're seeing about intensification of storms, for example, 12 hours from a tropical storm to a Category 5, maybe we should be looking at reviewing this more frequently than every 5 years, maybe something like 3 years. And I'm just wondering if there was a rationale for that number.
Generally, the best practice in planning is to revisit every 5 years, but it was also something that Council suggested through our workshop to do a review. It. We haven't provided a number necessarily, but as planners, the way we thought about it is, yes, you're going to review it every 5 years. But then when we did Council workshop, Councilor members and the Mayor suggested to make sure that it is a five-year review. But that's a good point, definitely.
Another question by the Mayor?
Well, just in relation to that, and I guess going back to our subdivision bylaw or any of ours, they have the five-year review wrote into them, and similar to other policies that I've become accustomed to, 5 years goes very quickly. I guess Council can always revisit any policy before that time. But that's an automatic, that it would have to happen at 5 years.
Thank you. Any other questions or concerns by committee members? Your last chance of this go around. Nobody? Okay, thank you. At this point, we'll ask the members of the public if they want to express any concerns or questions. To come up one at a time to the podium, if you don't mind. Yes.
We're actually going to get you to use this on the mic.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. State your name and your community, please, if you don't mind.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ree Brennan Houston, and we live in Rose Bay, also Halifax. So I'm liking what you're doing. And the question that comes to mind is, so we may have our house above those parameters, but when we drive there, we're on roads that are not necessarily above those parameters. So I was just wondering what the council is thinking about with respect to roads in Lunenburg County in the coming 77 years.
Okay, maybe throw that to the mayor.
You can throw it to the mayor, but most of those roads that we're talking about are provincial roads in order to get there. And I guess one of the statements that I've gone on record as saying is that the current way we're building roads, the current way we're doing things is not good enough. We do need to put bigger culverts in. We do need to do things differently. And hopefully that message relays back to the province. And when they look at road construction and rebuilding roads, they take that into consideration. Our municipal roads, I'm sure that we will. But we have very few municipal roads. Most of the roads we're talking about are provincial roads or private roads.
Thank you.
Any other members of the public would like to express their concerns? Sir, yes, would you please come up to the... the mic's already on for you there, so just state your name and your community, please.
Craig Hubley, Lehave Islands. I have a rather long list of concerns with this approach, but we'll limit to the general issues and submit a written response later. One of them is, while it's stated in some of this documentation that the intention is to provide some kind of flexibility for the many and odd situations we have in the county, it doesn't appear in this presentation that that's reflected in the actual regulations. When I start hearing things like a certain fixed number of meters around every so-called coastal marsh, well, the province defines two different types of marsh, a salt marsh that's determined by a soil type test and a fresh marsh alternative, and they do limit fresh marsh infill and more or less forbid salt marsh infill. If the municipality is going to vary at all from these categories or invent its own definition of a coastal marsh. It's going to need some ecological clarity on who's doing that, how that's defined. In many situations, we have, for instance, pre-existing roads or driveways or whatever, some kind of infill cutting off small puddles or ponds, and that could be called a wetland by somebody, I suppose, even though it's not natural and doesn't necessarily provide any kind of habitat. So my first concern is that there be very careful clarity on this definition of what is a marsh, because you're putting a rather large boundary around it in which all kinds of activities are going to be forbidden, including potentially septic fields and other things that are essential to building. The term coastal marsh has to be very carefully defined, I think. Also, in terms of, we really don't need any more rules that are just fixed in terms of, hard limits in meters. For instance, we've got rules for how far apart a septic tank needs to be from a well. But these rules are actually wrongheaded, because if you've got a big bedrock spur in between the well and the septic, then they can't interfere with each other. And there ought to at least be clear provision in the regulations that when you have, a topological survey that shows, hard rock between A and B, that limit isn't there, because if the issue is to protect the coastal marsh from inflow of water, then if there's a large piece of natural rock in the way, then that's not going to happen. So these fixed limits are going to cause a lot of problems if it's not clear in the legislation that they are there to protect the watershed. Now, that may mean that you can't get closer than 50 meters to a coast, to a marsh when you're along flat terrain low down, and it may mean you can go right up to the edge of it if it's a tall boulder sticking out of the marsh, because if the intention is to protect the marsh from water ingress, septic uses, or anything that can fall off of a human structure, then fine, then actually protect that. But throwing more numbers on that constrain the solutions that engineers come up with can cause as many problems as it solves. Related to that, with respect to the building footprints, having seen a lot of these additions to coastal properties, some of them wise and some of them unwise, it seems to me that if you're actually going to have any provision at all for improving coastal properties to make them more resilient from storms and more, evacuate them less, shall we say, certainly it's important that they be able to be lifted. But part of lifting them and part of making them resilient does include usually going around the entire footprint and making some kind of change. A contractor cannot get a piece of equipment under an existing wood-framed sill building. They have to, scrape a trench in front of it and around it. And if you're trying to make something more resilient to redirect floodwaters in a certain direction, that is going to involve some degree of structure seaward from the house. It's going to involve some measure of infill. So specifically where the intention is to improve the resilience of the structure and not create or relieve an emergency sort of situation in the house, there ought to be some flexibility in these regulations. I mean, set a limit like no more than 3 meters seaward for such features and no more than 25% of floor space, but don't make it zero and zero, or you're going to be buried in variances as people make the totally reasonable case to you that actually making the structure resilient requires some footprint changes. Also, it's not clear to me why second floor or other floor space ought to be restricted at all. I mean, presumably you might want to move things like kitchens and bedrooms up top, and you might want to put in more concrete, reinforced concrete posts if the idea is to make the structure more resilient. To actually just forbid making the structures practically resilient by not letting them be expanded around their base at all and not allowing the floor space to be improved on the second floor is more or less just a structure to an unstated policy to abandon all such structures. And I think that's probably undesirable for a large number of reasons. So I would suggest that when you actually have a clear plan that would improve the resilience of the structure or would redirect the floodwater, away, that these hard limits not be zero in every direction and not be a strict 15 meters. The largest concern I have is probably with respect to existing roads. We have many roads that are in that 0 to 2.34 meter rise, all of Green Bay Road, Rose Bay, certainly in Lehave Islands, we've got quite a few that are no taller than that. Now, when the province owns the road, the province will simply come in and repair the road, right? And they basically ignore any regulation you pass. But you're putting private landowners in a very, very difficult situation when we have private roads that we literally would then be unable to maintain. Maintaining them does require infill or lifting or whatever. So either there has to be an exemption for the maintenance of those roads, and clear understanding that they will sometimes be inundated, and roads get inundated all the time, even highways. And that can be, you know, you can relieve yourselves of risk of that any way you want. But I'm going to suggest that it's probably more practical to look at a long-term approach of moving as many roads as possible away from directly along the coastline. Now, to do that is probably going to involve going through a little bit of so-called coastal marsh, whatever that is, or it may involve a number of other compromises, may even involve some expropriation, may involve the municipality taking over a road that's hitherto been private. But there has to be some very clear strategy and clear plan for these access roads, because if you're not letting us maintain them in place, and many of them were damaged by Hurricane Lee, you can either put a blanket exemption that these roads just are an exception and get maintained however, and facilitate the moving at some later date. But if you're going to make them harder at all to maintain, I think you have two obligations. One is the municipality would have to formally take a position that the moving of the roads is a necessity as defined under the Land Registration Act and in the common law, so that if there was a plan to move a road inland, say, and a neighbor objected, that it could be defeated, their objection could be defeated by the necessity argument. The municipality can't tell the courts to do that, but it can certainly take the position that movement of the road is a necessity. And I think we'd formally have to take that position and formally have to advance that position as an intervener any time one of these real estate cases came up. I also think that the province has been somewhat inflexible with respect to its rules regarding, say, salt marsh, although it does say in the legislation that you can trade it off at about a 5-to-1 ratio if there's a substantial benefit. Again, the municipality should take the position that if you're forbidding building on 15 whole meters to 50 meters of coastline, that is a huge ecological benefit for the whole province, and that it does, by definition, entail some degree of trade-off or incursion further back. In other words, you're going to have to take a formal position that says doing this across the entire coastline is so beneficial that even if a moved road or a moved structure or whatever is going to infringe somewhat on a marsh or, you know, require some trade-off, that your position is it's worth that trade-off. So what is the 15 to 50 meters worth? Is it worth 5 meters of salt marsh infill, 10 meters?
Yeah, with respect, 1 minute.
Right. So the last point, I suppose, is that this entire province or this entire county has thrived with coastal communities like Blue Rocks or in Lehave Islands or Lunenburg that are largely built on hard pieces of rock right next to coastlines, and that with respect to coastal peninsulas in particular, horizontal setbacks can be extremely destructive. They can put the structures in the middle and everything around gets clear cut, as opposed to building multiple structures and leaving a wildlife corridor in the middle. So coastal peninsulas might be considered as an exemption, or you could simply reduce where there is hard natural rock that fixed horizontal setback to a minimum of 3 to 5 meters rather than 15. Under those circumstances, especially for those sensitive peninsulas. So, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for your thoughtful, well-expressed concerns and suggestions. Very appreciated. Yes, Councillor Latham, or Hasten, sorry.
Thank you. I just wanted to touch on something. I know when the province was looking at regulations around Coastal Protection Act, things like infrastructure, specifically roads, were exempt. Because they were considered necessary infrastructure. So I don't know how that plays into this, but just to sort of highlight that, and I know Jeff would be aware of that as well.
Thank you. Any other members of the public would like to express their concern?
Hello, Council. My name is Sharon Charlton. I'm on the Green Bay Road. I'm just wondering about, you're mentioning buildings and structures, but has there been any talk about stopping RV parks on the beach or putting mobile homes or anything like that? I just hear about, you know, setback, but, you know, what about temporary shelters or buildings?
Reed, you going to take this?
Sure. Yeah, that's a very good question that has come up a few times as part of this. If it's a movable structure, it wouldn't be covered by this. So this is intended to look at permanent structures that are affixed to the ground. So something like a trailer on wheels, things like that, wouldn't be affected by this. And that's because they obviously are movable. And so we can't really control from one day to the next it may be there, it may be gone. But I would say, we're all familiar with, we heard a lot about RV parks in particular as a use in coastal areas. And so a lot of the areas such as along Green Bay and further down are not zoned currently. They will be in the future. And so there will be further discussions about what types of uses are appropriate. And when that conversation is had, it will control things like RV parks that include things that are movable, because those are looking more at a general use rather than a structure specific.
So in my specific situation, the RV park that was placed on the dunes was destroyed. All the tree lines were removed. In front of my property, there's a section with trees. We were protected by the trees. They caught all the logs, everything. The property that was not was severely damaged because there was no dunes. So what can you do to assure me that my property is going to be safe? I had a river through my property. I had seaweed. I had water surge on my front lawn. And there's nothing I can do. So what can you do to assure me that, you know, destroying sand dunes is not going to put the ocean in my living room, which basically is what happened.
Reed, would you like to address that from a staff point of view, or would you rather the committee just deal with it?
Yeah, I don't know if I can answer really that specific question. I think that's a much bigger question. The intention of this is to look at, and the ability of council, the municipality, is really to look at future development. Can't look at what's already taken place and what's already in place now. And so down the road, when new things come along, the intention is they need to be out of the way, they need to be far back, they need to be away from things like wetlands, because there's known environmental benefit to putting things away from wetlands. And so the combination of setting things away from environmental areas, from the coastline, and elevating things up and away from the risk that the storm surge poses will help provide some of that protection that you're talking about. That's the intention, but it's really about moving forward and not, unfortunately, going to be able to affect things that are there now.
So the mayor has a comment as well first.
I guess I was just going to ask Reed, maybe you can talk about those ecologically sensitive areas such as the wetlands, but also sand dunes, and what the approach going forward was part of one. It's not on in this presentation, so maybe you could speak a bit more about that.
Sure. The intention behind the looking at ecologically sensitive areas was to say what are the areas that need to be protected from development, how are those being identified, and where that's come to now is to say look at what the information that we have is. And so currently the recommendation is areas that are deemed to be wetlands by the province would be areas where the municipality could establish a further kind of development setback around the edge of that. So if there's coastal wetlands along that area, I know there's a lot along that section. Going forward, there's a possibility that there could be a development setback from the edge of those wetlands. Dunes and other things, features like that, some of them are protected by the province. The ones that aren't, The challenge with those that we've discussed as we've moved along with this is that the municipality doesn't have the expertise to evaluate it like the province does. So the province has deemed some areas to be have significance in terms of dunes or habitat, and so they have the ability to evaluate those and deem them to be significant and put a protection in place. We don't have the information on those, and so for the areas where the municipality does not have the evidence coming from kind of a qualified professional, for now at least, the recommendation is that there aren't any areas other than the provincially designated wetlands included as a part of that. If their council could undertake evaluation on other areas, but that would require additional work to evaluate them and look at what features are there, what makes up a dune, what makes up an area of special significance if it's not already protected by the province.
The horizontal setback, though, the 50-meter horizontal setback should also provide some type of protection for dunes that are usually are located closer to the coast. And if we're talking about any future developments of RV parks, they will have to also abide by the coastal protection regulations. So they will not be able to build as close to, for example, in Green Bay, I know there's the example of one RV park specifically that is located very close to the water and was built on a dune, for example. The proposed regulations, at least specifically the horizontal setback, will be able to set that type of development further back and that type of development wouldn't be built as close to the coast as other similar developments alike that we've seen in similar areas in the community.
So someone who wanted to put a private just RV themselves, besides a whole park, that still applies, what you're saying? Like just an individual who wanted to put their own trailer on a sand dune?
Yeah, no. So
that setback is
the
still
municipality, it has to be in relation to a development. So somebody driving a recreational vehicle and parking on a piece of land wouldn't be considered a development. But if somebody wanted to develop a RV park where there's multiple ones and there's a difference there, but under these, it wouldn't control the one RV that comes and parks.
So when it comes to RV parks, I live in Timberley. I can't just put an RV park in my backyard. You know, my neighbors would be in an uproar. You know, there are zoning in Timberley. Why is there no zoning in the Green Bay area? Why can people just keep going and putting RVs on the sand dunes? And it puts the rest of us at risk.
Want me to take that one?
Sure.
Yeah. So the approach in the past has been that communities needed to request land use planning to put that in place. In the recent past, the province has passed legislation that requires municipalities to develop land use planning that covers 100% of the municipality. So council is currently working at that. So we have a project called MODL 2040 that looks out until the year 2040 and looks at, like, how do we want to see our communities evolve and develop over that time period? And staff are currently working on regulations that would be enacted that would cover the entire municipality. So there are areas such as Green Bay, and there's 88% of our municipality currently is unzoned, but we will have zoning, and I'll put the plug for our engage.modl.ca site, MODL 2040, and you can subscribe and follow along as that project moves forward and there's updates to that.
So as mentioned previously, everyone has a different scenario that's going on, different property owners. Has there been communication about having planners come out, you know, a request for a planner to come out and look at the individual properties and let us know what we can and cannot do.
I'm just going to mark that's the 10 minutes if you want to answer this one.
Yeah, once there's, you know, once the regulations are in place, like if people have questions about, hey, I want to do this, that, or the other thing, you know, we do have staff that residents can contact and ask questions about, can I do this? Is this appropriate? You know, if you have questions about how the regulations are written, staff can answer those and address those. And we can also, of course, before, you know, during the development of those regulations, like we're doing tonight, that you know, if you have questions, we can answer those questions and provide that feedback and clarity so there's an understanding of what the regulations will be.
Thank you.
Councillor Hazen.
Thank you. I made this comment during our last session. I'm going to highlight it again. I have a lot of concerns about us using only the province's definitions of wetlands or sensitive areas. We may not have the expertise that we need, but there are definitely other groups and organizations that would have that level of expertise. I know that the province doesn't have accurate mapping of everything. We certainly don't either. I just don't want us to rely only on Nova Scotia Environment, especially given their recent position about their definition of sensitive spaces, endangered species, everything else. I've highlighted this before. I just had to plug it again. Okay, thanks.
Yes, go ahead, Nareed. You had a comment.
Yes, thank you. We're well aware of the recent communication from Environment on how they are treating their wetlands, and there's been some, it's our understanding that there would be more circumstances where they would allow additional development in areas where they weren't previously, which is obviously a major concern. The approach here would be simply using, and I realize it's limited, but the using their wetland layer to show us where the wetlands are, but the actual protection of those wetlands would be the municipality's protections would be much more substantial than the province's in terms of what would be allowed and what wouldn't be allowed. The province will grant permission to do development in wetlands in certain circumstances or offset infilling and things like that. The recommendations here would basically establish a 30-meter development setback around any wetland. There wouldn't be, as it is proposed, allowances for filling in and adding somewhere else or, you know, varying different things. It would be a hard 30-meter setback, which is substantially, I think, in our view, more stringent than what the province currently allows.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from the public? Okay. If you wouldn't mind coming up and stating your name and community, please, ma'am. And if after you're done, if you wouldn't mind turning the mic off for the next person as well. Thank you.
Hello, my name's Marilyn Congdon, and I'm from Upper Kingsburg. And I'd like to commend Council for the work they've done to date on this project. I think it's a wonderful thing to be doing at this time. It's well needed. I like the new regulations are intended to meet protecting our communities from the coast and for protecting the coastline as well and the ecosystems that are within that area. I do have, under the staff recommendations, I have a concern about allowing some reduction to setbacks. It states in that section that erosion rates can vary between areas, with some experiencing lower rates compared to hurdle speech. To accommodate this, property owners would be permitted to engage a professional to demonstrate that a lower erosion rate exists and could build closer than the 50 meters option. The setback distances could then be reduced, but only down to a minimum of 15 meters from the top of the bank. Well, I'm afraid that my concern is that when you engage a professional, there's a wide range of what is accepted by professionals when they are considering a topic like that. I'm afraid that the municipality will end up trying to negotiate what is really acceptable here and what it's not. This option to reduce the setback doesn't give any leeway to the ecosystems involved, which were supposed to be part of the program. So the ecosystems aren't being considered if you reduce the setback down to 15 meters. It doesn't have the same effect. So that's my one of my concerns. My other concern is I'm concerned for the level of protection on Kingsburg Beach and Hurdles Beach. And I would like to request that council consider not granting building permits within the privately owned protected areas on Kingsburg and Hurdles Beach. Any questions?
Thank you for your concerns, expressing your concerns.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments to be expressed? Yes, sir. Would you like to?
I'm Peter Barris from West Dublin. First of all, I'd like to compliment you on the general principles of what you're doing. I think you're way ahead of the province that they're perpetually delaying the Coastal Protection Act. I just want to make a comment, and I think that at some point, land use along the shore, beyond just protecting structures and environments, has to be discussed. Do we want the shore lined with trailer parks? If we do, then line the shores with trailer parks. But And that gets into a very tricky area of aesthetics, but right now, because of what you're doing and mainly because of what the province isn't doing, developers have a green light to go ahead and get in under the wire and put up structures and developments that are just consuming our coastline. I'm old enough to remember when much more of the coastline was open to the public. Less and less of it is open to the public. It's being shut off by pretty much gated communities, you might as well say. And privatization of land that used to be considered to be public. And I just think it's terrible of what's happening to this province. It's becoming more and more a playground for the rich rather than a province that was years ago so welcoming and so friendly. That's my comment. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Barris. Any other comments from the public?
Karen Reinhart, New Cumberland and Crescent Beach. I wanted to speak to the review process. I think I would like you to reconsider the 5-year review. I think given the pressures that we have on our coastline for development and, as Peter mentioned, the rapid loss of, for one thing, accessibility by the public, I would like you to consider a shorter initial period of review. And as time goes by, if everything works out well, then perhaps it could be extended. Maybe first going off, you could have 2 or 3 year review. I know the mayor says 5 years goes fast, but it doesn't go fast enough when you've got developers crunching every piece of gravel they can. So I would like you to consider maybe a 2 or 3 year initial review, see how that goes, and then make it longer if everything is working well. And I'd also like to reiterate what two other speakers have said, that I'm really pleased and proud that the municipality is taking these steps to try and protect what we have left. And also appreciate the fact that we're allowed to have enough input into it that maybe we can start out with something that actually does reflect what we want here in the municipality. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You know, I just like to point out that this process is far from the end of it. You know, it still has to go to council, of course, and then there'll be public hearings. There'll be all sorts of other processes along the way. But to get to this point in the time it did, I just like to commend staff for their extraordinary work in getting to this point with all their public input sessions they've had throughout the municipality and with the work on producing this document. But it is a living, breathing document and subject to change by council, and all other processes will be considered as well. And I'd certainly like to thank everybody for showing up tonight. It shows you care about your communities, and we value your input. Is there anybody else who... lady in the back.
Good evening. My name is Karen Dempsey, and I'm a 43-year-old, 43-year resident of Crescent Beach. I did speak at the last meeting, but I have a couple of other comments for this one. I guess I would say, as a land use planner, now retired, I think that the setbacks you're proposing are more than reasonable, and in fact, if it were up to me, I'd make them a little more stringent than that. And I guess the thing that I'd like you to consider in talking about those setbacks and restrictions and protection for dunes and wetlands and beaches is the whole notion of reducing public risk, which I think a couple of people have alluded to, but not really got to in great detail. And this afternoon I was talking to my neighbor, who also happens to be the chair of Friends of Crescent Beach and unfortunately can't be here tonight because he has another commitment. But when I asked him, was there anything that he wanted me to relay to the Planning Advisory Committee, his comment was just recognition of how when the municipality is undertaking these kinds of planning initiatives, that really what it's aimed at is trying to reduce public risk. And what happens when you allow people to build, right next door to a marsh or right on top of the beach, is that when we have the storms that we know we have on a regular basis and even more frequent, and then they suffer as a consequence of that storm, that then their insurance, they go to their insurance provider and get compensation and replace whatever's lost. But everybody pays for that. And I think that's the thing that's not really recognized when you're talking about, restrictions and setbacks. It's not just about you and your personal property and, whether you get to do what you want. But it's the broader picture of considering your community, what's in the community's best interest, and what's in the public's best interest that might sometimes mean people have to step back and kind of consider that, maybe where my grandfather placed that cottage, 80 years ago wasn't the smartest thing to do given what we're dealing with today. And, look at, recognizing the value, in what is being proposed in terms of setbacks and restrictions. I guess the other thing that I'd really would encourage you, and I know it's not going to be an easy one, but I think you got to look at RVs. And I know when you say, and I'm not talking RV parks, I'm talking individual. And I guess I have some personal experience in that I have an RV next door to my property that's been there for 20 years. technically, could you move it? I suspect not at this point because I don't think the tires have been inflated for about the last 15 years. There are lots of them along the coastline like that, and in particular in our area. I think in this, when you look at the housing climate today, RVs are being used as housing options. And I think to some extent, I'd like to see this planning department recognize that. And I think when you're talking about these regulations, I think you have the ability. I mean, I know technically, you know, do they constitute a development under the current, you know, definition? Perhaps not. But I think you could add a definition within these new rules that could include that. And my opinion is that they should be regulated in the same way that you know, any structure is regulated. Because typically they're not just used for part of the year. You know, we see them in our area and they're being occupied, if not 12 months of the year, the better part of the year. And I guess the other thing I'd just like to say is in terms of providing and protecting public access to the coast that Peter mentioned, that's certainly been a mandate of this council. Certainly when I was a council member, I mean, that was one of our priorities. That's one of your priorities in terms of public open space, is protecting and providing public access to the coast. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Would anybody else like to express their concern for the first time? We'll get to the repeat. Folks, here we go.
Thank you. I'm David Himmelman. I'm from LaHave. I think I've lived in Lunenburg County for quite a while, and I was just back there thinking about the five different places I lived on LaHave River, and I don't think I've ever been 50 meters from the river. And when I sit and listen to the conversation tonight, I just wonder who we're trying to protect. And are we trying to protect the ecosystem or the landowner? And what are we doing to the landowner? There's other ways to protect the landowner. And if you're looking at dwellings, you can do it by elevation certificates, you know, that you have to build at a certain elevation. That's what they do in other places, and it's worked out fairly well. So I wonder who we're trying to protect. And then when I see the municipality going around and putting in the septic systems along the river, which they've had to do, and I think it's a great thing, but clearly we're putting them within 50 meters of the water. We're putting infilling in. We're doing all those things this year. And then next year we're going to say, no, we can't put a lawn in. You know, so I think there's a lot of questions here to be answered, and I don't see the answers here tonight. When I talk to counselors and they don't know the answers and they've been through this, and I hear, you know, the comments about we didn't get into the specifics of it. I think there's a lot of specifics here we've got to get into. You know, there's a lot of tax dollars here at risk. There's people that have bought lots, that want to retire, that build a their dream home when they retire. And those lots aren't going to be buildable under some of these regulations. And if this is ever deemed an expropriation type of thing, the council will be liable. So I think, you know, we need a little more thought. We need clearly, and we need to be able to answer all these questions before we put any of this in enforcement. And I think we need a little more notice, a little more discussion about it before it goes to law.
Oh, there certainly will be.
Yeah. But am I wrong in saying that after the first reading, it's enforceable or not?
Well, it's going down the road at first reading, that's for sure.
I can, Yeah, so I can address that. So tonight is the Planning Advisory Committee, and they make a recommendation to council. What would happen, council needs to provide staff with a direction to say, hey, this is the direction we want staff to provide, like write the regulations that look this way. So they'll provide that direction to staff. We'll come back with that to council and say, here's what the actual regulations drafting looks like. If council deems it advisable, they'll do what's called first reading. And when that first reading is published, nothing can be contrary to that. So technically, there's a time window there.
So that could happen in the next 30, 60 days. It'd be possible, right?
Yeah, it would be possible.
You know, so my question is, how do we sit around here tonight and in the past weeks when I ask counselors for questions that they don't understand the answers to, and in 30 days from now, we're going to have this enforced on the municipality? You know, I think this has got to, you know, I think this needs more discussion, you know, going forward. Granted, I don't study everything the municipality does, but I only became aware of this in the past few weeks.
Yeah. Well, there has been a lot of discussion in all the communities, and most of the communities affected by this. A lot of input to staff to consider for this document that we're looking at today. And as I mentioned before, this is not the end of the line here. It still has to go through council, and they can throw it right back to us again for
right,
further
but,
work.
Right, but the end of the line could be 30 days from now.
Could be.
Yep. You know, so I think, you know, I don't see what the rush of having this done in the next 30 days is. I think there's more discussion. I think people should be able to answer these questions, and we should know all the answers to all these questions that come out tonight, you know, before this gets put into law. Thank you.
Any other comments from the public? Okay, last call for the first go around. Any other you haven't already expressed? Okay, we're going to go to, would anybody like another 5 minutes at the podium or at the, to express more comments? You can go next. Okay, one. And the gentleman from the Lehave Islands, okay.
Less than 5 minutes for me. So Ree Brennan Houston from Rose Bay and Halifax. A quick point and a quick question. A quick point, with all due respect about the comments that have been made, that maybe you shouldn't be allowed to go closer than 50 meters, up to the 15 meters, because who's to say whether you're doing damage or not, or the erosion's happening or not, and different environmental professionals may have different opinions, and I completely respect that. I'm a career conservation biologist, but I am all in favor of what you have presented here, which is that you could be as close as 15 meters if there is not an erosion problem and you've got the height, because we have a property that has that situation. It's not going to be impacting it environmentally, and there isn't erosion. It just is a gentle hill up. The quick question was, do you actually currently have a map that shows what you consider wetlands?
Reed?
Yeah, there's a publicly accessible map, so that we use that information. It's publicly available from the province. It's basically their we call the wetlands map. So anything that they've deemed to be a wetland would be the map that we'd be using to show that.
But the way that we also mapped it would be 0 to 100 meters from the coastline in terms of what we would consider in our regulations a coastal wetland or wetlands that we are deemed to protect within these regulations.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to reiterate the concern of David Hamelman's there that we have been telling people that they have to infill and build septic all along the coastal river of Lahave, and then we're suddenly going to tell them that they can't do that at all in communities like, say, Riverport. How are the straight pipes and whatever going to be addressed under a no-infill regulation? That's actually must be answered before anything is passed, I think. There are some useful observations here that if the approach that was just outlined is going to be taken, that there will be a specific map of a coastal wetland and it will be only regulated once it's mapped, then in the mapping process you can solve the problem that I addressed, which was you can certainly have a surveyor assess where the watershed of that coastal wetland is and where, if the number is 30 meters, if where it's actually flowing into the wetland, you can protect 30 meters. And if you want, you know, some buffer, I don't know, 5 or something around the part where it's hard rock or isn't flowing in, then fine. But it would really alleviate an awful lot of this concern if it was clear that each such wetland was going to be mapped, that it was going to be mapped ecologically for where the water's flowing into it, and that the regulations had the specific purpose and intention of protecting and preventing water flow into it that was detrimental to it. Then it would be really clear when approving something like a variance that, you know, you're approving variances that don't affect the water flow and you're not approving ones that do. So I think the intent is very, very important, not just for the overall regulation, but for the exemption. I'm going to disagree with the speaker who said that that the setbacks had to be fixed somehow. The province is taking a very different tack on this. They're actually, they have a proposal that a program, unfortunately a closed source program, I think, is to be used to assess site-specific horizontal setbacks. And I think that once the province has, and I think that should be an open source program so there can be a real examination of the premises of it. But I think it will be very difficult for the council to maintain a different horizontal setback regulation than what the province is doing. If it actually is going to have any program that's capable of calculating the erosion site specifically, then a municipality having a hard regulation that prevents that from being calculated may well be in a deemed expropriation position and attract liability. I'm also going to disagree with the idea that trained surveyors can't assess what is and isn't an erosion rate or what is and isn't a wetland watershed. They certainly can. That's their job. Now, I think the municipality itself would have to employ a radically better lawyer than they presently do to deal with the issue of deemed expropriation liability and other liabilities arising from this legislation. I'm quite certain the municipality would need to employ a better surveyor than they presently do in order for people to have confidence that the assessment of the coastal wetland risks and so on were accurate. So keep in mind, all of you, that the level of expertise required to assess some of these things and to answer potentially in court to the issues that come up will be very serious, and they may well entail staff changes, contractor changes, and other changes in how this municipality is run. In fact, I can pretty much guarantee it. When the municipality's work is examined at the province and the province does finally pass a Coastal Protection Act, it will be looking at all the contradictions between the municipal acts and its own, and it may well just choose to override them all. And I think that's an undesirable result. So I don't think it's desirable to, you know, pretend you're doing something better by putting a, say, a, having no trade-off on something like fresh marsh infill, whereas the province says, you know, we accept trade-offs even on salt marshes and you could put in as much as 100 meters infill. To claim that it's absolutely beneficial to go to zero is going to be a very, very hard uphill push to get the province not to override that. So I think if you stay more in line with the way the province does it and say if the province allows 100, we'll allow 20, that's much more likely to stand up than zero. And I think if the province says horizontal setbacks will be calculated site-specifically by a program that takes into account real erosion numbers, it's going to be very hard for the municipality to pretend it's somehow better to have fixed ones. And the last item I'm going to point out is that when you force a building back further from a coastline, you don't just protect something in between. That probably becomes some kind of a lawn, or it becomes washed out by a flood. What you're really doing is you're putting it on another piece of habitat further back and destroying that habitat, as well as the one in front of the house, which is now, not with no infill and no protection, going to be washed out by floods. So you're actually decreasing terrestrial coastal habitat with this approach.
And that's your 5 minutes, Greg.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for those comments. Do we have any other comments? Okay, wait, lady.
Then comment. Karen Dempsey, Crescent Beach. It was certainly my understanding that these rules would not apply to the Lehave River. Am I correct in that? They will apply to the Lehave River?
They apply to the Lehave River up to Bridgewater.
Oh, okay. All right. Nowhere in this do I think it said that, and I just made the assumption that it didn't, that it would just be, I guess, what I consider coast, which is once you get down to full salt water. I guess the other thing, just for clarification, when you talk about wetlands mapping from the province, you mean Department of Environment, don't you? Okay. Just for anybody who's not familiar with trying to win their way through the provincial database. And I guess the other thing is, I would just reiterate, I know I said this last time, but I think the work you're doing is really, really valuable and really important. And I think a lot of residents in this municipality are heartened by the fact that you're prepared to step up to the plate and impose some regulations that have been needed for, I would say, 20 or more years. And don't be intimidated by threats of lawsuits.
Thank you. Yes, Councillor Bell.
Mr. Chairman, I see there are some questions or comments coming in on Facebook. Okay. Do we have a staff member that is answering those? Okay. I see the questions coming in, but I don't see the answers going out, so that's why I asked for clarification.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or concerns from the gallery? No? Yes, Councillor Hasten.
Thank you. Just to go back to the province's regulations around Coastal Protection Act, which, of course, is not in place, and there's no indication that it will be, and there was also no indication that those regulations were formalized. But something that they did say a number of times is whatever regulation is more stringent, whether it's something in place by a municipality or the province, whatever is more stringent would apply. So I think it's important for us to acknowledge very much that all the work that we're doing here, if the province turns around and enacts the Coastal Protection Act tomorrow, it could do away with what we are discussing today, or it could be that what we have put in place is more stringent. So I know that that was something that the province had stated when they were looking at those regulations in the past.
All right, so if there's no more public comments, I'm going to turn it back to the committee for any concerns that they've developed during this process at this table tonight for their comments and concerns. And if there are none, then we'll go to the next step. So the mayor.
I guess, Jeff, are you going to explain those next steps as to what happens from here?
Yeah. So this committee makes recommendations to council. So this committee can decide what they want to recommend to council. Council will discuss it and provide staff with direction on how to proceed. So if council decides that they want to proceed with regulations, council will basically say do this or that for each of the items. And staff will prepare those written regulations and bring them back for council's we would call approval, which requires two readings. So there needs to be a first reading that would happen. Once that first reading happens, notification goes in the local newspaper to let everybody know that, hey, council is proposing these regulations. Staff will hold a few public information sessions to explain what the regulations mean. So if anyone has any comments, or sorry, any questions about what's being proposed, staff will answer those questions so that citizens can then provide an informed comment at a public hearing, and you can speak either for or against all or part of the regulations. That public hearing will be in front of municipal council, and council cannot approve the second reading until there's a public hearing that has been advertised at least once a week for two consecutive weeks. So at the close of the public hearing is the only time that council would then be in the position to approve the documents. It's important to note that from first reading, there is a 150-day clock that starts. So when council does their first reading, even though the regulations aren't fully approved, there is a window where any development can't be in contrary to the proposed documents, but council has 150 days to decide whether or not they want to conduct second reading.
Mayor.
So I guess when we look at these next steps that's on here, I guess I want people, and I know a lot of you do understand that because it has a tick doesn't mean it was a one meeting. There were several meetings that happened in the initial public engagement stage that took place back in the spring and the summer, and even for the recommendation that goes to PAC to draft those regulations for the what says the fall there, that's not a one meeting agenda thing. I expect that's going to take a few meetings to get to where it needs to be. What we've heard tonight definitely will be taken into consideration for all of the process going forward. And what we heard at the last meeting.
Any other comments from council? Oh, from council, sorry, from the committee. No, hearing none, I would like to read the recommendation and then ask a member of the committee who's willing to move it. So the recommendation is that the Planning Advisory Committee, the PAC, respectfully recommends to council that council endorse the recommended coastal protection measures contained in option one below. This is the whole report. And instruct staff to draft a municipal planning strategy amendment and new land use bylaw respecting these measures to be brought before council for first reading. So everyone, sorry?
I just see there's a question on Teams. I wasn't sure if we were having public speak from the Teams meeting.
Somebody joined from Teams? And it wasn't,
we do have a aware of member of the public has his hand up. So the committee wants to hear.
Yep.
Yeah, we can.
Okay.
Keith Sullivan, if you want to.
Yes.
Unmute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, Keith.
Okay. I've been putting some comments in the chat, but people haven't been answering them. So I'll follow along on trying to see whether you're talking about a 50-meter setback or a 30-meter setback. Which of the two are we talking about?
Can I answer that? For coastal erosion, staff is proposing council to consider a 50-meter horizontal setback from top of bank or from the ordinary high water mark. And for sensitive coastal ecosystems to protect wetland, staff is proposing council to consider a 30-meter horizontal setback.
Okay, and I know someone asked whether there's the map showing this. I live on the lower Pence Road, and I haven't got my measuring tape yet. Out yet, but I would think that most of us are within 50 meters. Our houses are within 50 meters of the Lahave River. So will you be producing a map so that we'll understand this a bit better?
We will be able to produce a map to make things more clear, but as from just answering the question, at least from how I heard it correctly, any existing houses, any existing dwellings are considered to be legal non-conforming uses. Hence, technically, you don't need to adhere to the 50 meter in terms of how where your house is currently located. But any other future developments within your property would have to adhere to the 50 meter horizontal setback.
Nobody's going to ask you to move your houses back.
Yes, because I do know that will affect many of us who would have a lot on this road, that it sounds as if we would not be able to develop anything on that empty lot. Is that correct?
Sure. excuse me. Yes, we would be hard to tell you exactly without seeing the lot and looking at a map. But just to clarify the question on when the public would be able to view maps, the reason there hasn't been maps prepared and available to the public yet is because council hasn't officially given staff the direction to prepare the regulations. As much as there's been discussion up to this point, council has not directed staff on what distance or what regulations they would like us to prepare. Once they provide that direction, if it's 50, if it's 30, if it's 20, whatever that setback is that council would like to pursue, staff will then prepare those appropriate maps. We don't want to come with staff recommendations showing something that council ultimately doesn't want to pursue. So that's kind of the reason why. So once that meeting occurs with council providing that direction is when staff can go ahead and start preparing those draft maps, and the public is more than welcome to see them.
It is a bit of a chicken and egg problem, though, and that is how will council decide to proceed if they don't know in their districts what types of property will be affected?
I guess there still could be direction to our planning staff that we would like to see those maps before a decision would be made, whether it's the 30-meter, 50-meter, or what some of that would look like on along the river compared to along the coastal communities. Yeah. So council can still ask staff for those that type of information.
I mean, because I'm trying to visualize myself on council, and I'm not sure that I'll be able to make an informed decision if it's not clear to me what will happen in my jurisdiction, whether it's 30 or 10 or 50. So I would actually encourage to have the maps first. Now, I think what you're saying is that you could say tentatively, let's develop these maps. And I suppose that's, develop these maps and then we'll tentatively look at something. That would be a way to go about this. But I think most of us would be relatively ignorant on exactly where we're measuring from. And so it would be clear, it would help us to be clearer and to inform our counselors about our concerns if we saw a map that then talked about the areas that we know. So I'll leave that one to you. One comment I made, and I'm sorry I got in late on the meeting tonight because, as you may know, there was a problem with Facebook, and so I had to go to another program. But I had mentioned on coastal erosion, I understand the concern about building, and I want to support reasonable activity on that. But when I think of global warming or weirding, whichever way you want to say it, possibly a more pressing problem would be how we will travel in the municipality with respect to a rise in water. And I had left that comment on at the meeting we had in La Hague, and I was just wondering whether anything else has been done. For example, I would be concerned about whether from the La Hague area or from the La Hague Island area, we'll be able to travel on the 331 if we had a rise of 10 meters of water. I think there are a few places where we would be shut off from travel. So I'm just wondering whether the committee looked at that at all or whether they're going to look at it.
Sure, I can just chime in. That was discussed briefly, the discussion on that was basically that the vast majority of the roadways throughout the municipality are owned by the province. The municipal side, the best thing we can do is provide information and make sure that they're all aware of where there are flooding issues and make sure that they have all the data that they can use when they go to do things like rebuilding projects.
Okay, and I'll just make one last comment on that. If I think it was David Himmelman said, who are we protecting here? And I know we want to protect the coastline, but we also want to protect the citizens. And to me, the first major problem that will occur will be a travel for us. And so however that is handled, I think that we have to take that one on. I have done my own personal planning. If there, for instance, is a 10-meter rise in some storm, how I would get from my place to Bridgewater. And it would be very difficult, actually. I'd have to drive a fair distance out of my normal pattern. So I'm just trying to take, in some ways, a bird's-eye view here, saying if you're worried about different issues, possibly the more important issue is how we will travel throughout this municipality if we have major erosion caused by increasing water, either coming up from the Lahave or going down to the Lahave or going down to lakes and up from lakes. So I know you don't have an answer for that, but thank you for your comments, and I just throw that out to the councillors and the team.
Okay, well, thank you for joining in, Keith. We appreciate it.
Okay,
so I've read the recommendation, and is there anybody on the committee that wants to move that?
So question, moving the regulations the proposed regulations as they've been presented, that's what's going to council.
Yes.
There's not room during this meeting to make adjustments to those regulations. Where does that conversation take place?
What adjustments would you
so
like to make?
So, for example, something that's for me, simple and straightforward is changing the period of time for a review. I'd like to see that at 3 years instead of 5 years. That isn't reflected in the regulations as they've been presented, so I'm concerned that if I move or vote in favor of the regulations as presented today, that there isn't room to change or adjust or incorporate what we have discussed here today. So I guess I'm looking for clarification first.
Okay, sure. We could probably deal with that tonight. Yeah.
Well, I still think that there's probably a lot of questions and a lot of this is not council. When council sits around the table, council is going to have to come up with what they feel needs to move forward as well. This is a recommendation from a committee that will go to council. Council has the final say on this. We have heard a lot of information in our last two meetings. And a lot of good information, and information that I would like to see reflected in some of these, which is not reflected in what we are approving here tonight to move forward to council. So I guess no different than the cluster development in the last meeting, there are still a lot of things that I am going to raise at council in relation to that. I voted in favor to move it to council for the process, not because I believe everything that is in this report is where I am. And I will be honest with the public. I think that there are things that we have not considered, things that have been raised, and things that need to be reflective in this document.
Yeah, and we've heard from the public tonight, too, that they would like to see that lowered to a more frequent process as well. Reed, you have a comment?
Yeah, just for process-wise, it is helpful for staff if there are particular elements that the committee has agreement on to put those in the motion. We did hear from members of the public following up from the last meeting that were confused about whether staff was going to act on any of the recommendations that were made because the motion that was passed didn't include those. And so just for the public's benefit and for staff, if there's agreement on certain things, because there may not always be agreement. Some people may want staff to look into something, but everyone else is happy as is. Certain items like that are helpful for us to have the direction, particularly if you'd like us to do more research or look into certain items, that we can kind of spend our time focused on that.
Well, you know, I guess if you go from a 5 to a 3, you have to look at the ramifications of what that's going to mean from a staff point of view and resources, et cetera, as well, too, right?
So again, if I could comment on that 5-year, and I do support the 5-year simply because planning documents, all of those things have been a 5-year review in the past. And it's the time that staff has to do the 5-year reviews on the policies that are in place. I still say 3 years is very quick. I think that council still, if we see storm after storm after storm and we're getting hit monthly by hurricanes or whatever, and this, if the document is not right, council at any time can open up that document. They do not have to wait 5 years. Council has the jurisdiction to open up a document. The review is an automatic that has to happen at that 5-year, that staff would have to do the review at the 5-year mark. So telling staff that they have to do this one at the 3-year mark and the cluster development at the 3-year mark and the other one at the 3-year mark or whatever, I'm not sure what that means from a staff capacity, because there's a lot more planning documents than the coastal protection bylaw and the cluster development and what MODL 2040 is going to bring and put in place. And I just have concerns that just saying that tonight is not, it doesn't reflect, I guess, what I've heard in the past of planning documents.
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned earlier, this is a living, breathing document open for review and amendment at any time. Councillor Bell, you had a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do find it somewhat difficult to make an informed decision based upon the facts that we are not presented or supported with mapping. And I understand from the discussion here that that comes at a later point. But I'm being asked to recommend a proposal that has distances in it without seeing mapping. While I want to limit some of the types of development, there are two sides to the coin. I know that the setbacks proposed are rather severe based upon the worst-case scenario and based upon high erosion areas. I think when planning was looking at putting this together with a recommendation, they had to probably look at scientific information at the worst case scenario. And so that's how it may be written. I am concerned of some of the views that I did hear out of Riverport, where some of the landowners were concerned that they currently own parcels of land that would be undevelopable. They were bought in previous years either as an investment or as a possible retirement location. And I can't just disregard their concerns. Their concerns is just as important to them as some that want to see these regulations as tight as they can be. I think that where we're looking at 50-30, there needs to be able to be some compromise at maybe 30-20 or something. With discussions in council, I want to make sure that all councillors are able to discuss and debate this, meeting what they're hearing from their own constituents. We live in different districts, and concerns are different slightly in different districts because they have different priorities. So we have to understand it needs to be a compromise along the way. So I have to look at this really close if the recommendation is exactly as it's coming forward here.
Yes, Councillor Creek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if a staff member can clarify what steps are involved with the policy review process in a document such as this.
Okay. Jeff?
Okay, I can take that one. So you can do different levels of review. So you could do just a, like, hey, let's do a review, like a quick review to make sure, like, are there anything that's not working that are, you know, you go through and it's not as an in-depth review? Or, like, when we talk about, like, a 5-year or 10-year review, we're typically looking at a comprehensive review. So we're doing a deep dive and looking at all aspects of it. And basically we'd go through a process that would take a few months, several months to go through. We would have public input into the document, similar to like how this document is being created now, where we had public engagement, we had surveys and gathered feedback from the public, had the What We Heard report come through the PAC. You know, there's the two readings, a public hearing, so it's a similar type process. But you could do like a high level review where it's, you're just looking at, you know, is there anything that is glaring that needs to be fixed, which would take, you still have to go through a process, but it would, could be a quicker time than if you wanted to do a comprehensive review, which is like, hey, every 5 years or whatever the number is, we want to do a comprehensive review of the document and do a deep dive.
May I ask a supplementary question, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So if this policy says 3-year review, would it still be the in-depth review with the public input? Or is that, would you save that for a 5-year review?
It's at the end of the day, it's whatever council like puts in their policy. So you could say, you know what, in year one, we want to do just a high level review. Are there anything that like glaring things that need to be tweaked with this document? But we're not going to commit to doing an in-depth, you know, spend the amount of resources we did creating the document to review it. But whether it's, and then for your 3-year or your 5-year, whatever the number is, council can say, we want a comprehensive review. So we want to look, open the document up. Everything's on the table. You know, that would, you know, when you do that review, then staff are, would dig deep into like doing research. So what are the other areas doing? Has anything changed since we adopted the document? Are there new, are there any new regulations since, any new research, any new projections, those types of things?
Okay. Well, in that case, I would like it to say 3 years as well, just in case we miss the mark completely on something and there's a certain area that we need to change sooner than 5 years. I would like to see 3 years.
Here.
I guess, how is this different than our subdivision bylaw that we're asking to have a look at it before the five-year review? Just asking the question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, I would suggest that it's different because our subdivision bylaw is feedback specific to our regulations, where these regulations are going to be affected by climate that is completely without our control, right? So if we're starting to see, you know, significant storms or flooding or these events happening more frequently, I think that that's why we have to have the nimbleness to be able to respond or review more frequently.
Yes, Ms. Heck.
Mr. Chair, I would agree that maybe a means of compromise is that we look for the first time 3 year, and then after that we can go to five, if that helps.
Yes, Councillor Wynot.
Yeah, on coastal flooding on Area A, it says prohibit infilling. Down the river, on my side of the river, it's a lot of infilling going in, but it's protecting everybody's property. There's a lot of valuable property down there. If you can't infill, you're going to lose that property. So it's nice to say no infilling, but if you don't, you're going to lose it a lot quicker. So I think that should be addressed.
Any other comments around the committee table?
So I guess just to Councillor Wynot's point, is there opportunity for, this is an existing dwelling that he's talking about, to be able to protect that property? Does this allow for that? Or does this say no?
I guess the recommendation or the regulations aren't written yet, so that certainly could be something that's recommended as part of any infilling regulation, is that there are allowances for things like protecting existing dwellings. But raising something up, depending on how you raise it, if that requires infill, the current recommendation just says not any infilling. But I think that there's been a lot of instances raised where if council wants to pursue some type of prohibition on infilling, there should be some certain exceptions and allowances for things like roads repairs or, you know, improving someone's existing dwelling. So that's certainly like a good recommendation to bring forward if council wanted to pursue, because council may not want to go with that recommendation at all. But if they do, there would be allowances for exceptions from that.
Yeah, so we've got two councillors around the table that expressed concerns about the five-year going to three. So if this recommendation went forward to council as it is, those concerns would be brought up at the council table and changed then. And including the concern that you've expressed, Councillor Reed, too, about infill. Yeah, Mayor.
And I guess this isn't in relation to the 3 to 5 years. I guess just looking at the storm surge and the coastal flooding, and maybe you can clarify the 77-year storm or the rise in the high watermark in relation to the river compared to actual coastal properties. The LaHave River is tidal, and yes, it does come right to this. These regulations are intended to come right to the town of Bridgewater. So can you explain that to...
So the way we approach this, we had several meetings with experts from the federal government and the provincial government, whether it was Department of Fisheries and Oceans and Natural Resources Canada, but also professors from Dalhousie University that are experts of climate change. They do several studies to investigate this. So then the way that we, I guess, approach what should be the vertical elevation setback was through different factors. The first one is that most coastal management assessment is being done in relation to climate change is that they look at scenarios by 2100. So it's not the 100-year storm or the 77-year storm. It's how sea level rise would look like by 2100. And the assessment by Department of Fisheries and Oceans and Natural Resources Canada, they created a tool that is based on the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change of the UN. And that sea level rise for our municipality, it's about sea level rise will rise by 1.57 meters by 2100. Into that, we also added other factors, such as the spring tides that are also occurring during the winter and during the fall, when we usually are experiencing most of our severe storms. And that number is 0.77 meters, and that number we got from Department of Fisheries and Ocean. We also added another number, another factor into it, and that's the storm surge. And storm surge, you look at historical numbers or historical storm surges that we had in the past. And the current, according to what we have right now, the data that we have right now, the most severe historical storm surge that we had so far was from Hurricane Juan. And that stood on 1.63 meters. So when you calculate all of them together, you add all of them together, you get to the vertical elevation setback that we need to have from relative to the 2013 Canadian datum is 3.97. So you measure it from the mean sea level rise and not, like, for example, from the ordinary high water mark. You measure it from relative to mean sea level. And that's the numbers that we got. We got them from experts, and we made sure that we are doing due diligence and seeing as many people as we can to assess that number. And the way that we divided what we are proposing to employ the two-zone approach is that Area A that you see in orange, it's the coastal inundation area, and that area is basically the sea level rise by 2100, so the 1.57 meters. Adding to that is the spring tides, so the 0.77 meters, so which adds to 2.34. And that area, as of now technically, is periodically inundated. But by 2100, where the scenario says, we're expecting it to be that by 2100, that area will be most of it will be permanently inundated. And thus, we are recommending to council to consider that this area will be an area to prohibit residential use or institutional use, because we need to think about the future. You don't think about 5 years from now or 10 years from now how your house will survive or your life, or you think about future generations and how you will use the house in 20 years, but also your future generations in 50, 70, 80. So the structure should be protected and maintained from any future flooding event, severe flooding event. And Lunenburg, unfortunately, was severely impacted this year by the storm. And we saw in certain areas along the coastline that areas were severely inundated past the 2.34 meters. So that's why staff is proposing that two-zone approach to make sure that we are protecting residents. It's not just protecting the environment, but we aim to protect human life. And that's the main approach behind the two-zone constraint zone. Answered your question.
Okay, so I asked for somebody to move that recommendation. There was nobody to move it. Well, just a sec. I just have an amendment here. If you, so I don't have to deal with the first motion at all, right? There's no motion. I'm going to read the recommendation again. That the Planning Advisory Committee, PAC, respectfully recommends to Council that Council endorse the recommended coastal protection measures contained in Option 1 below and instruct staff to draft a municipal planning strategy amendment and new land use bylaw respecting these measures to be brought before Council for first reading, comma, with the exception of the timeline for review amended to 3 years. We have a mover here. Do we have a seconder for that? Okay. So it's moved by Councillor Haysom, seconded by Councillor Greek. Do we have any further discussion? Mayor?
And I guess I would ask at that time that the maps be prepared for council so council can have a clear indication as to what the 50, 30, even the 15 proposed in some would look like.
Okay, I'm not going to add meter. That to the motion, but that'll be addressed by council. Okay.
Provided that it shows up with the report. Yes.
Yeah, okay, they have the maps. Great. So, any more questions or concerns from the committee? Call a question. All in favor of the amendment or other recommendation as read, signify by saying aye, raising your hands. Contrary minded, if any, none, the motion is passed. Thank you very much, and thank you in the public for your input. I really appreciate it. We don't need a break. We're tough.
Do you want to do a break or no?
I don't want to do a break.